our speaker today is Fran Feinberg, who is also with the Miami office. She started out actually as a volunteer with the Guardian Ad Litem program back in 1990 and became a staff attorney shortly after that in 1991. And she was responsible for the development of and the implementation of the criminal court project for the Guardian Ad Litem program. And then eventually she became the full-time senior staff attorney for the management and direction of the criminal court project at Christie House in Miami, Florida. So this is obviously her area of expertise. She's devoted her career to advocacy in the victims' rights context and has also received a number of awards for her work as a victims' rights advocate. So with that, Fran, maybe you can explain briefly, just I know that you're affiliated with the Guardian program still on the 11th Circuit, but I wasn't sure if you're a volunteer or if you are a part of the staff. I wasn't sure.
I am part of the staff.
Okay.
I have been on staff since 1991 in the criminal court project of the Guardian Ad Litem program for the 11th Circuit. And I was actually for many years I was part-time, but I went full-time about 10 years ago. So, and I worked totally in the criminal court. So my perspective is very much from the criminal court perspective, dealing with children who are victims and witnesses in criminal cases. Now, obviously, many of my kids have companion dependency cases. And we'll talk about all of that, but I'm very lucky. I am here at Christie House, which is our local advocacy center. It's called the Orlowitz Lee Children's Advocacy Center, and that's why we call it Christie House, because it's such a mouthful. And here at Christie House, we are co-located with the State Attorney's Office. Their Sexual Battery and Child Abuse Unit is here, and they're upstairs. We have CPT here also. We have on-site therapy, and all the forensic interviews are done here. So it's a wonderful, wonderful place to be, and I'm very, very lucky. I want to apologize. I had sent out handouts, and one of the things I sent you was Administrative Order 99.1, and that should really have been Administrative Order 01-07. So I will explain that later, but I apologize. I don't know how I did that. I think I had it in the wrong compartment. So Administrative Order 01-07 creates the depositions to be done here at Christie House. So that is a very important administrative order that we have. I want to talk a little bit about that. It does designate the location for taking depositions of children 12 years and younger here at Christie House, and it says, in all criminal cases where a victim or a witness 12 years or younger is to be deposed or interviewed, the location has to be Christie House, unless otherwise agreed upon by the parties. So, anyway, I want to go through and talk about preparing a child for a deposition. First of all, you have to speak with your guardian ad litem. If you know that you're going to have a deposition of a child, the first thing you do is call your guardian. Your guardian is going to be the one who can tell you if your child has the ability to testify, hopefully. The guardian has met the child. I know in my case, a lot of times, I've never met the child unless they've been here for therapy and I've met them after a forensic interview or after a therapy session. I know nothing about that child. So the person who knows the most about that child is your lay guardian. Ask the guardian, is there any problem with the child? Any problems at home? Any red flags like bedwetting, problems in school, your guardian's going to let you know about that. So that's the most important thing, is that you first reach out to your guardian before the deposition. If you do have a problem, then you're going to have to consider getting your child evaluated. You're going to have to consider motions for protective order, and we'll go into that later. But, excuse me. Also, if you have a therapist that's working with a child, you should speak with them regarding the child's ability to testify. Sometimes the therapist can prepare the child for the depo in the sense that they can articulate to the child what the deposition will entail and allay any fears the child has regarding the process. That therapist can reassure a nervous child that the deposition will be in a safe setting and that the only people present will be the guardian, the attorneys, the court reporter, and, of course, an interpreter if it's required. First thing, the guardian should meet with the child and the lay guardian for a short while prior to the deposition. You need to explain to the child what a deposition is and why it's necessary. I have a little speech that I've used for years and years with children, and it's called my empowerment speech. Now, I'm not a therapist, but excuse me. I've had enough experience with depositions and with children to know that you, as a guardian attorney, can empower this child by telling them that this is a time where they can take control of the situation and that they can not be a victim. And I also like to give them the freedom to know that this is not something that they absolutely have to do. I always tell my teenagers, you know, you can walk out the front door. You're not a hostage here. So this is something that you need to do and that you will not regret doing. You may regret it if you don't do it. So you have to sort of empower these children. Certainly if you have a therapist working with a child, speak with a therapist about empowering the child. So anyway, I meet with the guardian and the child. I usually like to just take about 15 or less minutes, not much longer, because the more you talk about the deposition to the child, the bigger it can become. So I try to keep it simple and not act like it's something that the child has to be too concerned about. I explain exactly what each person's role is in the deposition. In other words, the DCF attorney, if the DCF attorney is present, the parent's attorney, the defense attorney, if we have a consolidated deposition, which almost all of mine are consolidated, the guardian's role. In other words, if the guardian's going to be next to you during the deposition, you know, that she can't talk to you about the answers, she can't touch you. I explain so that the child will know what to expect from the guardian. And that there are certain rules that have to be followed. Hold on one second. I explain about the court reporter and how the child has to speak out loud because the court reporter is taking notes. And sometimes with a younger child, I'll go into great detail about the court reporter's machine and take them in and let them see the machine before the deposition so they can understand why they have to speak out loud, and sort of a diversion for children, too, explaining to them that they can't nod because the court reporter can't take down a nod. I explain the rules. I explain the rules just the way I'm going to explain them to you. The rules are they have to tell the truth. I explain they're going to be under oath, and I give them a concrete example of what truth and lie are so that they can articulate it in their own version. With a younger child, you might say to them, "I'm wearing a red. Am I wearing a red dress today?" With that, and if I'm wearing black, then I would say, "Is it true that I'm wearing a red dress today?" And then obviously they would say, "No, you're wearing black." And I would say, "Okay, so the truth is I'm wearing black." Usually with a teenager, you don't have to go into great detail about truth and lie. They usually know. But with a younger child, you want to give them an example so that, because this is going to be asked during the deposition 99.9% of the time. So just that is the first thing that I do is explain truth and lie. I tell them that you have to only tell what you remember. It's okay if you don't remember everything, that you're not here to please adults. We just want to know what you remember. That's the second rule. The third is if you don't understand the question or you aren't sure that you understand, then you say so. I explain the attorneys ask really confusing questions. Sometimes it's impossible for the adults to know what the questions are. So they need to know that they should not answer if they don't understand what the question is. And to speak out loud, obviously, and to think before you answer. And also, I tell kids to breathe. It's really important that kids breathe and that they, you know, that you make them laugh and you make them comfortable. I would tell you don't ever lie to a child about whether or not a videotape is going. If the child asks you, you tell them, no matter what age they are. But it's not something that I bring up. I don't say to a child, you're going to be videotaped. If they ask, obviously, then I'm going to tell them. Don't lie to them about who might watch the tape. If they ask about is my dad going to see this tape, or is my dad or my mom going to know what I said, or is the defendant going to know what I said here, you have to be honest about that. But you have to ensure them that they're in a safe space, and it's their job to tell what happened to them or what they witnessed. Let the child ask you questions. Make sure they understand that some of the questions are going to require them to speak about very embarrassing details. But explain to them that it's absolutely necessary that these questions be answered. Assure them that no one is going to be judgmental. And I never, as a guardian attorney, get into any of the details with a child before a deposition, because that's not my job. It's the assistant state attorney or the DCF attorney, whoever's conducting the deposition, whoever's prosecuting the deposition, the case, should be the one to prepare the child and go over questions and possible answers, but not the guardian attorney. My role as the guardian staff attorney is just to make sure the child's protected from system abuse, and I know that you all know what system abuse is. Now, preparing other parties, preparing the guardian. Sometimes a lay guardian can be, for lack of a better way to put it, an overprotective mother hen. And a lot of times I'll have a guardian call me up and go, oh my goodness, we're going to have this deposition, and I don't, this child can't undergo a deposition. And then you, of course, go through the reasons with the guardian why they think that a child can't undergo a deposition. And if you have good reasons, of course, then you're going to file your motions for protective order after you find out from your therapist or your expert whether or not the child's able to do it. But if you just have someone who, as a rule, thinks that kids shouldn't be deposed, then you sort of have to explain the facts of life, of the legal system, to your guardian. And the majority of guardians are fine, but sometimes you get a guardian who is very high-strung, and you need to calm them down and explain their role during the deposition, that they are there for the child, but they need to be very careful. They're being videotaped. We don't want any overt body language. Sometimes guardians want to help with the children with the questions, and so I always explain to them, you can't say anything during the deposition, and you really are just there to be a moral support for this child during the deposition. I'm going to just tell you real quickly how it works here. We have three deposition rooms, and when we have a deposition, and especially if it's consolidated, we don't have all the parties in the room with the child. We have the defense attorney, the prosecutor, the guardian, the lay guardian, the court reporter, and then I, as the guardian ad litem attorney, will be in the room right across the hall where we have a live feed from the video, and I can see what's going on. If something happens during the deposition, then I can step in and, on behalf of the guardian, stop the deposition. If there is no guardian, then, of course, I'm in the room with the child. Anyway, I was just explaining how it works here. But for a consolidated deposition, we would have the other people who would be involved, such as the parents' attorneys, in the other room across the hall. And the main part of the deposition would be done by the criminal court defense attorney. And then when he or she has finished asking the questions of the child, then the other parties would have a chance to ask follow-up questions or give the questions to the defense attorney to ask. Usually, in a consolidated deposition where it's a parent or a guardian who is accused of, a guardian meaning a custodian, who's accused of abusing the child, that defense attorney has asked most of the questions that would be pertinent to the case in dependency. But if they haven't, then the other attorneys would have a chance to ask the questions after they had finished their deposition. But they are in the other room so that we don't have 10 people sitting around with a child in a room. And plus, our rooms are very small. So that's how we work it anyway. Going back to the guardian, I tell them, you know, just be there and smile and be reassuring, but no touching, no crying ever. I have had guardians tear up, but the guardian's demeanor can really impact the child's perception, so you have to really stress to them that this is a time for them to be calm. Let the guardian understand that the child may start crying or tearing up at a certain point, but that's normal. And if the child can get over what I call the hump, you may well have a very good, successful deposition. And I'll talk more a little bit about the hump, as I call it. Other parties. Make sure everyone knows you will not allow any bad behavior. And know your parties. I pretty much know most of the defense attorneys simply because I've been around here for almost 20 years. I know a lot of you are younger attorneys or who have only been with the program a short time, and you may not be familiar with your attorneys, the defense attorneys. So it's really important that you find out the reputation of that particular person who's going to be questioning the child. And I like to, if it's somebody I don't know, I like to call them and sort of go over the ground rules and explain to them, especially when it's a consolidated deposition, because not everybody knows that we have to consolidate depositions. So I like to reach out and explain the law to them and how it's going to work so that they don't get here and have any surprises. So I would suggest that, you know, if you don't know the person, you call them up on the phone and explain how the deposition's, you know, who you are and how the deposition is going to proceed, and that nobody should belittle or badger the child. Also, a very important thing, sometimes during a deposition, attorneys will start arguing, and that's a really bad thing to do in front of the child. So I always tell the attorneys not to argue in front of the child. If you have a disagreement about a question, step outside and discuss it and work out your disagreements. But fighting in front of the child just raises their stress level. File motions for protective order ahead of time if you know there are going to be issues that your child can't handle. I had a recent deposition of a child that to go back. We had to have the deposition of the child about 6 months ago, and during the deposition, she broke down, and we had to stop the deposition. And I was out of town, and my associate, George Montero, handled the depot, and he rightly stopped it. And we, because it was a criminal case, also a dependency case, it was a consolidated deposition, it took a while for us to reschedule it. So it was actually very good, because we had almost 6 months between the breakdown and the depot that happened last week. But I watched the deposition, the videotape of the deposition, to find out what happened. And what I noticed was that it wasn't so much the talk about the sexual abuse that made this child break down. It was talking about her family and about her mother. And I spoke with the guardian, and the guardian said to me, she said, this child just can't talk about her family. So any questions that have to do with her mom or her living arrangements or her separation from her sister and mom trigger the breakdown. So I spoke with the defense attorney. I had seen him in the hallway, and I said, I knew the depot was coming up, and I said, look, and I don't want to have to file a motion for protective order. Can we just agree that you won't go into any more questions about her family? And I was very honest with him. I said, it's not so much the sexual abuse, it's the family issue that makes her break down. So he agreed, and I trusted him. So we got through this depot. We started right where he had left off. He just had a couple questions like, you know, how's school? And then he got right into the nitty-gritty of the sexual abuse, and she was fine. She teared up, and she got over the hump. And then she actually started smiling, and by the end of the deposition, she walked out of there. And I know she was very empowered, because she just walked out with her head up and then a completely different demeanor. So that was really a wonderful experience. But I think, you know, if you have a kid that you know is going to have problems, and you have an attorney that you know is going to give you problems, a defense attorney, then you need to file your motions for protective order and argue them to the judge. And, you know, you in your juvenile rules of procedure, your discovery, under discovery, 8.245I, this pretty much mirrors Florida Statute 92.55. So you have the ability to completely control how your deposition is going to take place. And if you're talking about a case that has a criminal case, then you're going to use 92.55, excuse me, and you're going to file those motions, and you're going to argue to the judge. You know, say you have a young child, I think the youngest child I've ever had was 4. But if you have a child of a very young age, say 5, 6, 7, 8, you don't want a long deposition. These children can't withstand a 2 and 3 hour deposition, so you ask the judge to make it an hour or less. Sometimes kids can't take that long. You make sure that everything is in place. You may even file a motion, that limits the questions, or has the defense attorney submit questions ahead of time. Or, and we've done this before with a child that we had who, even though he was a teenager, he was mentally retarded, and we had the evaluator, Dr. Vanessa Archer, actually ask him the questions that the defense attorney wanted asked. So that worked out well. So there's all kinds of things you can do to control the time, place, and manner, and you need to be thinking about those ahead of time. And also, you need to explain to your defense attorneys about age-appropriate language. Sometimes young attorneys or people who haven't had children just don't know how to talk to a child, and obviously a six-year-old isn't going to understand legalese. Obviously, a lot of people who are grown don't understand these types of questions, so you have to explain to them that you have to keep it very simple. Hold on one second. I have to have a sip of water. This is so strange talking to what seems like an empty chair, but anyway, I know you're all out there. Okay, so we were talking a little bit about a filing. I think we sort of already talked about number three, filing the appropriate motions for protective order using 92.55 or using 8.245 of your juvenile rules of procedure. I always like to use an expert, a doctor, if I'm going to have to file a motion in criminal court to for protective order for a deposition. Now, we don't really do too many of them here, to be honest, because we're just lucky, and we pretty much have a reputation that whatever we say is going to pretty much fly. And so, but occasionally we do have to file one, and I can remember one that we filed a long time ago was to keep, we had a case where there were two defense attorneys, and that's pretty common. I mean, there'll be two defense attorneys in a lot of cases. We never let two defense attorneys be in the room with the child at one time, because that's obviously double-timing the child, and it's intimidating. So if we, I always tell them ahead of time, you know, you guys aren't going to be able to be in there at the same time, but you can communicate, you can come outside, you can communicate with each other. You know, you have to decide which one of you is going to ask questions, because it's not going to be that one of you asks some questions and one of you asks, you know, the other, if they're representing the same person. Of course, it's different if you have a consolidated deposition where you have a different attorney for the defendant in criminal and you have a different attorney for the parent in dependency. But, you know, just like I was telling you before, usually the defense attorney in criminal will cover the majority of what needs to be discovered, and it, we just don't have that many follow-up questions. Same thing with a DCF attorney. I ask them to be in the other room watching the live video feed, just because, you know, we have the state attorney, the assistant state attorney in the room, and we don't need that many people. And plus, our rooms are really small. I would tell you that they're too small. We have a table, sort of a child-sized table in the middle of it, and we can't really get more than, max is six people. I've seen seven, but that's it for that room. And so everybody else needs to be outside, and the less people, the easier it is on the child. So anyway, I was going to tell you that we had to file a motion one time for to keep the two attorneys from being in the same room. They just insisted that that was the way it was going to be, so we filed a motion. I joined with the assistant state attorney, and of course we won it, and we won it under 92.55. So I'm trying to think of any other motions off the top of my head that we've done recently. That's pretty much it. I think that probably in dependency, dependency, the guardian attorneys are filing more motions than we are here, simply because we have, I don't know, we just have a sort of a working rule, and our defense bar has come to accept that the depositions are here at Christie House and that they are conducted in a certain manner. So I guess we're really lucky in that, you know, in that way. Anyway, going on to number four, and of course we'll have plenty of time for questions at the end of this, but going on to number four, the procedure during the deposition and when to suspend a deposition, I've sort of already talked about it a little bit, but excuse me. I mentioned before the hump, and the hump is what I call that time, and I think you've all seen it, when the child has to talk about the most embarrassing and, you know, the nitty-gritty of, you know, the abuse, and especially with sexual abuse cases and teenagers, I think it's almost harder for them because they're the teenager, as you all know, is sort of more of aware than a much younger child. I have young children who go in there and they just are very matter-of-fact about what happened, and it's just like, yeah, Daddy did this and Daddy did that, and they're fine. And then I have a 13 or 14-year-old, just like this one I was telling you about that we had last week, who will just fall apart. You need to warn your guardian ahead of time about, you know, this happening. And you can always, you let your child know that you can always take a break. I like to, in the beginning, set my child up with water or sometimes, you know, a Coke or whatever they want, some juice. I like to make sure that they're not hungry. If they're hungry, I give them a snack. I also like to make sure that if it's a young child, we're not starting a deposition at 4 or 4:30 on a Friday afternoon, because that's the worst possible time for them. So anyway, you're going to see your child maybe hit that hump. Now, the hump is different from the wall. If you see a child who starts crying and who starts hysterically crying and gulping for air, then that's not the hump, that's the wall. You've got to stop the deposition. You can always talk to the child outside and see if they calm down, have your guardian with them. If there's someone there, such as a foster mom or a relative who can console the child, make sure that you have them available. But if it's not, you know, if the child can't do it, you're not going to get anything out of them, so you have to stop it. If you have anybody start belittling the child or harassing the child or arguing in front of the child and not going outside to settle their differences, then you as the guardian attorney have to go in there and stop the deposition, and you yank the tape and you go to the judge. We're lucky because we're two blocks from the courthouse. We sometimes, if we know we have a defense attorney that we've had problems with before, we might make sure that the judge is around that afternoon if we have to stop the depo. We've actually taken the tape over to the courthouse and walked into the judge's chambers with the parties and played the tape for the judge and then let the judge see what was going on. And then obviously you're going to get your motion for protective order pretty much right then. But do not, you know, just don't let that kind of behavior go on. Sometimes people just don't understand children, and they just don't understand that what they're doing to a child is very harmful. So sometimes if you can just take them outside and talk to them and explain the facts of life, they'll change. And also I find that the fact that somebody is being videotaped, the majority of people don't want to misbehave while they're being filmed. So I find that the videotape is really the best protective tool for the child being abused by attorneys. So anyway, if you do have a problem during that deposition, stop it. But if you can let your child get over the hump, you know, if it's just a few tears, that's the best thing that can happen, because I've just seen it. I've probably done 800 depositions, and I have seen that happen in hundreds and hundreds of depositions where the child tears up, and once they start talking about it, they sort of get into a rhythm, and you can have a successful deposition. excuse me. Helping a child decompress after a deposition. What does that mean? Well, you know, after the deposition, I like to just, I always tell them that they did a good job. You know, if we had to stop the depo and they couldn't continue, I tell them it's okay. You know, you didn't do anything wrong. Just make sure that they feel good about themselves when they leave the building. Have important people available to help the child, such as we're really lucky here at Christie House because, you know, we have the therapist on site, not necessarily the child's therapist, but we have therapists available, and sometimes it will be the actual therapist that treats the child. And I let them know that the deposition is coming up, and they're usually available. And so you can walk that child over to the therapist if there's a problem. Or just walk them over to the therapist after the deposition and say to the therapist, oh, my goodness, they did such a wonderful job. I have what I call Fran's rule. And my rule, I always tell kids after they've done a deposition, is that they have to do something that evening that makes them happy. If it's only ordering pizza or you know, watching their favorite show, and I like to tell the custodian or whoever's with the child did a great job. Please make sure that they get to do something special tonight, if it's only to, you know, watch a half hour of TV or, you know, play a video game or whatever. You know, have important people available. Have the therapist available. Have a relative. Have the foster mom. Obviously, the guardian. The guardian is, you know, the most important person there other than the child. And I always explain to guardians that it's very, very important that they be here. Now, with that said, we will sometimes have a deposition without a guardian. There might be a guardian who is sick or can't attend, and we've had the deposition scheduled. Excuse me. And people are counting on this deposition going forward at this particular time. We may have speedy demands in criminal. You may have a judge in dependency who says, we're going to trial, excuse me, next week. You must, you know, be ready. And the child has already been transported or the arrangements have been made to have the child here at the deposition. The child has missed school, so I will sit in, you know, for the guardian. I don't just reschedule because the guardian's not here if there's a good reason for the guardian not being present.
Okay, well, our time is just about up, too, so thank you so much. This has been great.
It's been my pleasure. I hope that you guys are all having a less wet day than we are here in Miami-Dade. And thank you for letting me do this. It was a pleasure.